It's amazing for me that I'm not going to preach about church today, but all the shofar churches are just spending some time in prayer for the Church of Jesus over the years. On today, in 1992, God called Fred May. This is the Great Exodus where the kids just left the building. Where Fred May and Lisol May were called to preach the gospel in Stellenbosch. A racially different couple, obviously not that welcome in Stellenbosch in those years. And amazing times just of eventually just preaching to the down and outs, the drug addicts, the crazy ones all over. The first group of shofar members, I knew some of them, quite wild. Quite wild is a euphemism. Hulle was baie wild geweest. Very ecstatic group of people. Hello, Lucas. Say. And it's amazing that over the years, since then, the first churches we planted in 1998 was Tigerberg Campus, obviously a logic shoot of the church. BSc and other students who moved to Tigerberg Campus started forming a community there and started ministering the gospel there. So it grew to that Tigerberg first plant, 1998, 1999, led by Pastor William in those days. And then the second group of churches were us in Pretoria, Windhoek, and London. In 2003, we started with services. It was an amazing time. Grew a lot since then. And then obviously from the churches, as the gospel was preached in areas or people moved, relocated to places, or because of outreaches done in places, the churches grew and were established. So I know most of these people really very personally because many of them have been in the church for more than 15 years. I've been a pastor for 16 years, and it's amazing to not just see the growth of the shofar churches, but the growth in us, the members, how we have grown. So maybe if you can grab one of these and take it home, maybe you can just spend time. Maybe the Lord lays one of these couples on your heart, or maybe one of the churches. Maybe because you came back from London, you have a burden for the church in London. Or maybe because you relocated from Pretoria, soos ons, you have a burden for the churches up there. Or maybe there's a town from which you came and you so long that God will also, that there will be more people saved. There are churches of God all over. But if you come from a town that is not on you, but the Lord spoke to you, then please pray and please speak to us. So God sends his people to plant his church. I'm going to speak about the second part I introduced in terms of us growing. And we're busy with the 40 days of prayer. I've had conversation with quite a lot of people over the last 2 weeks. And so today it's going to be slightly personal. So I'm going to try to not be too personal. So I've been in pastor now for 16 years. And the last few months, I've really grown in relationship with God in terms of my friend. There was a time when I realized through revelation that God really is my father and that he really loves me and he really approves of me and he really is affectionately in love with me as his son. And it really changed my life big time. That's the reason why I had confidence to enter into ministry, because I realized that God really is my daddy and he's proud of me before I do anything. That he loves me, he's not going to write me off because I'm naughty. And I must say, like many of you, I'm looking at Christian, not because I say the word naughty. But if you're a father or a parent, you get that part of the revelation easier, eh? It's like if your kid disappoints you or if your kid is deliberately and willingly rebellious towards you, you're still his dad. And you still love him. And I think that helps, eh? That helps. So I've grown in that area especially in the early part of my ministry. But the last few weeks, I've really grown in an understanding, an experiential understanding that God really delights in me being his friend, that God actually wants to be my friend. And I knew that. If you asked me this 10 years ago, I could give you 10 verses. I could have done it because it's in the Bible. But you know, there's a different level of knowing something. It's like you can tell about it, but can you give me a few examples of this? It's like, And in the week, we're busy with the 40 days of prayer, and you're welcome to follow. If you haven't been following, you're welcome, just to go on the Facebook page daily. There's a daily devotion on just growing in your prayer life, or maybe just helping, not growing, but just growing in practice of your prayer life. And for some of us, you have that discipline, you've got it down. But in doing the exercises that I write, it's always good to do what I say. My wife likes that about me. Anyway, if I do what I say and say what I do, integrity. But in doing those exercises that I write down, in meditating on the relationship with God, I had to be honest again in the last 2 weeks that if you were to listen to my conversations with God, I wonder whether the first thing that you'd say about my relationship with God is that God is your friend. I mean, how many of you, maybe you can just fly to the next slide, Audrey. In Exodus chapter 33, that one line, it had me bold many years ago as you just read through the book of Exodus. And there's this one line that it just says, just in passing, Moses obviously wrote Exodus at some point or gave it over. But he wrote, and God spoke to Moses as his friend, face to face. And it's the strangest concept, you know, experientially. And I had to ask myself, if God were to listen to my conversations, if someone else were to listen in on my conversations, if you were to listen to my conversations with my wife, you will learn a lot about my relationship with my wife. You'd pick up that I like her. You'd pick up that we've been walking a road for many years. You'd pick up many things. You'd pick up that we have a special relationship, and if you listen long enough, you'd pick up that we're husband and wife. I wonder whether you would listen, if someone were to listen to your conversations with God, whether this is what they would say of your conversations with God, that you regard God as your friend, or that God would regard you as his friend. Because this is a simple truth. At the heart of the Christian gospel, at the heart of Christianity, is the invitation of divine friendship. It is the essence of what the Bible is about the divine friendship. I'm not disregarding the fact that God is the supreme creator of heaven and earth. I do not disregard the fact that he is Lord of all. I do not disregard the fact that he is master and Lord of all, and that I regard myself as his servant. I am properly his creature, and I am his servant. But that's what makes Jesus' conversation in John chapter 15 so beautiful with his disciples. In fact, a few times he comes back to that one. That's what makes the conversation so beautiful, is that he says, listen, guys, I'm about to leave. This is my last intimate conversation with you tonight, tomorrow. And he says it plainly to them, I will die. I will be arrested. I'll be killed. I will die. So please note, this is the way in which I want you to know and regard me. If you haven't picked it up, let me say it to you plainly. I've been walking with you as a friend for 3.5 years. And this is what I want our relationship to be, friendship. And he qualifies why. He says, because I share my intimate thoughts and my intimate life with you. This is what I want to do. This is what I aim to do, that my relationship with you is primarily one of friendship. And this is the heart of the Christian gospel, that God says it. Psalm 25, you know that verse, it says that friendship with the Lord are reserved for those who fear him. That when he speaks about his prophets, he says the same thing. He says that I share these with my friends, the prophets, because I share everything with them. So it has to do with that invitation that God says, I want to share my intimate heart, my intimate thoughts with you. My question again, if you're listening to your own conversations with God, is that a reality for you? Because I want to say this is the most enriching and rewarding thing, to be invited to be the friend of the Most High God. That is what God did with Abraham when he made a covenant with him. He came down and he said, listen, I want to relate to you as a friend, as someone who sticks closer than a brother, as someone who's always with you, as someone who's honest with you, as someone who would pop by and visit you in your house, like he did with Abraham. As someone who says, I want to walk a road with you. I want to share life with you. This is the community from Abraham, from this friendship. This is what I want. I want to create a community, Israel, a nation that are princes of God, that share life with God. I want to come and make my... What's the first thing that he did after he saved them from... After he saved the Israelites from Egypt? He said, can I live with you, please? can I pitch my tent among you? And then they were freaked out by the fact that God wants to have a conversation with me and says, no, let's send Ross to talk to God. I will do what he says, but friendship is a bit intimidating. Moses, let's send Moses. Did I say Ross? Goeie punt. But that's the invitation that God has for his people. So what did Jesus do? What is the image of God? Jesus says, if you see me, you see the Father. What do we see Jesus do? The Word became flesh, and he dwelt among us. He pitched his tent among us. He walked among us. He lived with us, and he shared life with us. He came into the home of every single person that would be on the planet. Luke, I'm going to talk about that at some point. But literally, Jesus moved from house to house and had a meal with everyone, every single one. And that's what James also concludes about his brother. About his brother Jesus. Does that freak you out as well? About his brother Jesus. That he says, listen, if we can pick up something about God, then this is it. We can choose to be friends with God or friends with this world. We can choose to be intimate with God or intimate. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Let's go for intimate with God. Let's go for intimate with God. That's what he says. That's what he loves. Aristotle said, still quoting him after 3,000 years, Aristotle said, that it's Greek philosopher. He said it's really impossible to be a friend, and he's with the gods, because he was. And he understands friendship because he says that. He says impossible because, and this is his argument, there's nothing relatable. We are too different from, his words, the gods. So translate. We are too different from God to be a friend with him. We don't share. We have nothing in common. And maybe to explain that, C.S. Lewis, how many of you have looked at images or abbreviation or read the book of the Four Loves? So, Tanya and Dirk, anyway, so the Four Loves, Tanya and Dirk, if you can recall, he gives the four Greek words of love, you know, affection, friendship, philos, eros, romantic love, and agape, godly, selfless love. And he's trying to define it. And for us to relate with friendship, he says, and you'll see the picture up there, when it comes to eros love, erotic love, romantic love, it's slightly awkward, Dirk, but romantic love always looks one another in the eye. It's like this, that my relationship is intimate like this. Friendship love primarily is the two of us looking at one object and we go, and this is what he says in the book, that the heart of friendship is that we stand next to each other and we point to something, like in the image, maybe you can see up there. It's like, me too. And this is what Aristotle tried to say. He's trying to say, it is not possible for us to have a relationship, in his understanding, it's not possible for us to have a relationship with a God who says, really? Me too. Like Ruan would say, wow, really? Yes, I'm so tired of this messed up stuff. And in Aristotle's understanding, God will not stand next to him and go, me too. It's like, or if he'd say, wow, I just so crave for a chocolate milkshake type of thing. Stupid example. And some of you are craving like that, and you're wondering whether God would say, me too. But at the heart of the Christian gospel is the fact that God, and this is what we see in Jesus, became flesh and literally in every aspect identified with us, and then he qualifies in Hebrews, except sin. Maybe you can just put up that next slide there. Literally in every aspect, that God became flesh and dwelt among us, literally walked among us, pitched his tent, shared our very existence, and the author of Hebrews says that in every single aspect, Jesus had to become like his brothers, nice, no? Had to become like his brothers, like us, his brethren. In every aspect, without sin, tempted, and then chapter 4, verse 15 and 17 says the same. 4, verse 15 and 16 says the same. In every aspect, he was tempted. In every aspect, he suffered in every way so that he can identify with us and us identify with him. It's the heart of the Christian gospel. So what is the word there that we're looking for? Jesus literally did everything he could so that we can have a shared platform, so that we can look at something and go like, so it really breaks my heart. And then Jesus goes, mine too. Mine too. Or, I so wish for this to happen. And Jesus would say, me too. I know. I get you. I feel what you feel. I literally share what you have. You know, it's amazing if we look through history, the word compassion, the concept of compassion, it's actually, it's amazing. It was really Jesus' preaching that made compassion a word that we use over and over. It's really the only religion where God actually can feel with us. Every other religion does not even try to go to friendship, doesn't speak about friendship with the gods because it's not possible. Every other religion has the idea that God is up there and we're down here, and we should strive to get up there. Christianity, at its heart, has the fact that Jesus said, let's pick you up. I'm coming down. Should I come over to your place? And then Jesus said, no, I'll get you at your place. I'll pick you up. I'll come down so that I can relate with you where you are. Literally be a rabbi. Walk with you, live with you, and share. So my PC's power is running down, but I know that I've got it up there. So there's an offer at the heart of Christianity for friendship with God. It is the heart of Christianity. It's a relationship where we talk to him as friends, where we have a relationship with him as friends. Let's see why. The first thing then is we can see it in the Genesis story. By the way, it's literally in every single Christian doctrine, for those of you who've studied Bible school at any level. But even if you have it, you'd understand what I'm saying. From the story of creation, from the doctrine of creation, we are created in the image of God. God created us so that relationship is possible. It's the whole goal of creating us in his image. And you'll see it in two levels. Actually, three things are highlighted up there. The first thing is he created us in likeness, in his image, in his likeness, in his imprint, so that we literally, it's easy for us to identify with him because he identified with us. We're created in his image. He made us relatable. He didn't make us sub-relatable. He made us relatable to him. Secondly, the first thing after creating us, what does he do? He say, share in my power, share in my authority, govern with me. Come, it's partnerships, friendship partnership. It's like, it's the heart of relationship. It's like, come, share with me in this. I create you in my image so that I can relate to you. And secondly, that you can partner with me, live with me, share in life with me, literally do everything with me. But there's a third thing in that verse which I just want to highlight, is that he says, it's not just that we created in his image, we created in God's image, and it's the Trinitarian doctrine, the doctrine of the Trinity. The fact that God, at his core, is community, is friendship. When John says that God is love, philos, what he means is that God is friendship. It's at his heart. It's the fact that God is Father, Son, Spirit, but they have lived in eternal communion with one another before we created. He didn't create us based on a need. He didn't create us because he was lonely. He didn't create us so that we can fulfill some need that he had. God was fully satisfied in himself because they've had an eternal communion with one another. And then I'd like you to see what God does. He creates us in his image, and then he says male and female. He created us to share in his friendship, in the very basic relationship that we share with, that he shares. It's into community, but as community. God is at his heart. Augustine, who ironically said that, don't worry about that. But St. Augustine said that God is first love before his power, because God is Trinitarian. He's three in one. He's community. If God was Unitarian, if God was only one person, then he'd be first power, before he'd be love, if at all possible. Because you create from, there was no community and I create. But because he's community first, the essence of his nature is friendship. The essence of God's nature is friendship. The shared community, the invitation to share life with him. It's the heart of who he is. I'm going to move on. It's amazing. So the second creation story account, second way of telling the same story, is God. So Adam and Eve were created. I love that phrase that actually Desmond Tutu quoted many years ago. He says that we are created, we are desired into being by God. He desired us into being to share in his fellowship, to share in his life, to share in his friendship. He created us to share with him. But then because of the fall of sin, because Eve desired God's power and not God's community primarily, to be like him, to know good from evil, to have all his knowledge, to discern by herself, not based on relationship. There was a fall of sin, and I love what the story tells there, is that Adam and Eve realized their fallenness, realized their shame, realized their nakedness without God's covering, and they hid themselves. But like every single day, I want you to get this, God's desire, like every single day, which they did every single day, God came and he took a stroll with them again in the cool of the night. Took a stroll, just like a walk, like many of you would walk with your wife once your kids are old enough to care for themselves. Anyway, but and some of you go like, I really desire that. And then Jesus says, me too. Yeah, it's amazing. Anyway, so walk in the garden like every other day. And this is the call, this is the first question that God poses mankind. It's like, where are you? And I want you to get that. The first call that God asked humankind after the sin, after the fall of sin, was not, why did you do that? Not, what did you do? Not, how could you do that? Why were you rebellious? So the focus is not on the sin, eh? I want you to get that. The question poses the heart of God's creation, not for you to be my subject, to do what I say, but for me to be your companion. Where are you? Where are you? It's the heart, it's the cry of God crying out saying, where are you? I'm longing for you. Why are you hiding? Who told you naked? Who told you that you are not good enough for me? Who told you that? What's wrong with you? And I want you to get that God is the one, like always, initiating the closeness, the proximity. It's his longing heart that cries for companionship, for friendship, saying, where are you? Where are you? Who told you that you're not good enough? Who told you that you should hide from me? What stupid thing is that? Come. And then God is the one who initiates the cover, the atonement, and everything from there onwards. It's even if they have fallen, even after they've fallen from Eden, it's always God approaching. It's always God talking to Adam. It's always God talking to Eve. It's always God talking to Cain, to Abel. It's always God initiating conversation because his heart is friendship. His heart is friendship. It's the essence of his heart. He draws him closer. It's him luring Moses closer. It's him doing all of that. This is the last story I think I'll tell, just to get the image. I love this image of Zacchaeus in the garden, in the tree. So Jericho, picture Jericho. This is the time of Jesus. I know I just jumped a few thousand years in history from Genesis to Zacchaeus. But it's the same story. It's Adam and Eve all over. There's a man in a tree who is a tax collector. He's a chief tax collector, which means he's worse than every other person. Anyway, I'm not going to go into the tax collectors again. But the essence is he's really crude and vile, and he oppresses his own countrymen to enrich himself at the cost of his neighbors suffering brutally from the Roman army. That's what he does for a living. So customary in those days, the tax collector would walk past. If a tax collector walked past kids, the kids were instructed to spit on the ground out of disgust. So if you were to ask, who was the loneliest man in all in Jericho? It would be Zacchaeus. He's the loneliest, most despised person in Jericho. He would love to leave Jericho, but he has to stay there to enrich himself. And you notice that Luke records he was really rich. He was a chief tax collector. He was really rich. And then you can read, he was really, really lonely. He was really lonely. And then he'd heard of Jesus, and he'd probably heard of Matthew, one of the other tax collectors from Judea, who actually Galilee, who actually was also saved by Jesus. And he would probably hear of him, and he wanted to see Jesus, but the Bible records because of his stature that he's too short. I want to say it's probably not the only thing that kept him away from the crowds where Jesus was. Just want to say probably not. So he climbed in a sycamore tree for the Lord to see. You all know the song. And Jesus walks past, and again, it's not Zacchaeus shouting, "Jesus, I'm initiating a relationship with you. Can you come to my house?" It's Jesus stopping and noticing a very lonely man up in a tree and saying, "Zacchaeus, I know about you by reputation. You're not too bad to have company with. Can I please come to your house? Can I be your friend? Can I come and stay with you?" Because a meal, customary, especially in those days, was all about companionship and friendship. We would become friends because we share a meal. That was the heart of sharing a meal. It was like we're making a pact, we're making friendship, we're eating together, which says that I relate to you in this way, in proximity and with where you are and with my needs. I'm sharing life with you. And that's the heart of Jesus. And I wonder how many times, I mean, let me just speak for Ross. There were definitely times in my life where I was so aware of my personal failures. It was really difficult for me to think that Jesus would notice me, initiate a meal, and come into my life and come into my heart. It was really difficult to imagine that. Just like Adam and Eve, who was hiding away and thinking, maybe God would be friends with Dirk and with Melissa. But I don't think Jesus would enjoy having a meal with me. I don't think Jesus wants to have friendship with me because, you know, I mean, I'm naked and ashamed. I'm hiding. I'm a tax collector. The people even know, or my family even knows how bad I am. I don't think they want a relationship with me. And Jesus goes like, no, I want to share a meal with you. I want to come into your house. I want to live with you. And this is the first, please notice this. And this is what, please, religious people like myself. Jesus didn't say to Zacchaeus, "Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house. And so, stop being a tax collector. Stop oppressing your countrymen. Stop stealing tax of poor people that are already oppressed by the Roman Empire. Stop with your immoral parties with the prostitutes at your house. Stop doing all those things, then I'll come to your house." None of that. Or even after sharing a meal, there's nothing that Luke records, and it's deliberate. There's nothing that Luke records saying that you have to change anything, just like Adam, who messed up. And the Lord didn't have a conversation with Adam about his sin first. In fact, there was no recording about God having a conversation with him about his sin. It was supposed that he knew that, and therefore God intervened and saying, "I will do this for you, because you got yourself in a mess too big for you. You can't save yourself anyway." And his initiative is all this: I'm coming to your house to be your friend. Radical acceptance, radical, I value you, I recognize you, I notice you. I want to be your, I created you to be your friend. I desired you into being. And then what's the response of that massive? It's Zacchaeus himself that's being transformed deep in his heart forever. I mean, he changes so deeply that he says, listen, he repents from being an oppressor, and then he says, "I'll even pay back double everything." So he sunk himself economically. I mean, imagine the Gupta saying, imagine Zuma saying, "I'll pay back everything double." And you go like, it's not possible. I don't know what you did with the money, which is the point here. From this moment onwards, he lost everything because he found the pearl of greatest price. What is the pearl of greatest price? Friendship with God. Friendship with God. That is, he's like, I've never known anything like this. I'm included, I'm loved, I'm supported, I'm covered, I'm cared for by God Almighty. It's amazing. Maybe let me just close. Oh, I've got another story. Just the picture there. So Derek Kinder is the guy who wrote the theologian who wrote the commentary, the Tyndale commentary to Psalms and Proverbs. So he's an amazing Old Testament scholar, poetry scholar. But when he defined friendship, because Proverbs and Psalms, please read it. That is the, if you want to know how to have a friendship conversation with God, read through the Psalms, pray through the Psalms. You'll notice that He's Lord and He's God, but you'll notice that David, Moses, all the other psalmists who wrote, very personal, very direct, very, very honest, very candorous, honest, vulnerable in their discussions. It's amazing that they're very, very honest. So if you want to know how to talk to God like a friend, get a contemporary translation of the Psalms and just read through it, because it's very personal. It's very personal. So he said in his study of friendship in the Bible, these are the two things that he sees. The first one is honesty, to be candid. Honesty, vulnerability, to be blunt. Saying, to allow someone in, to not cover up, to not hide, to say, listen, this is the deepest me. You're welcome inside here. I know this is very vulnerable and it can hurt me and it can shame me, but hey, this is me. Open up. And the second thing, he speaks about consistency, that friend that sticks closer than a brother, that friend who's always there, that two is better than one because of the security that it brings, but the fact that he is dependable. So loyalty is the other word for that. But if you, that's the reason why I put up the picture there. Timothy Keller, he says, if he looks at the cross, that's what he sees. It's the picture. If you want to know what friendship with God really is like, then the picture of the cross is so helpful in many, many ways. Meditate on the cross. He says he used to do boxing in college, and he doesn't remember too much of his boxing lessons. But the one thing that we all know as boxers, we all know, even if you're not a boxer, is to never let your hands down, to always be like this, to hide, to cover yourself, to protect yourself. Because as soon as you like this, lights out. So just to cover yourself. And he says that's what he loves about Jesus, the image of Christ on a cross. It's not just that he opens up to allow you in. It's he's nailed shut like that. He's nailed like that. He cannot. He's made himself impossible to cover up. Doesn't matter what we do to him. What we do. Friendship. It's an invitation inside. And is constant and is dependable at his own discomfort to the point of death. He's proven that he really forever wants to be your friend, and he has made a way for you to please come inside. It's an invitation inside. Friendship with Jesus. I want the band to please come up. We'll sing that song again, What a Friend I Have in Jesus. I think this is nearly my last song. Slide. Het vergeet van hierdie. We sang the song of Joseph Scriven. And like every one of the enduring hymns, there's a reason why this hymn touches us deeply. There's a reason why it outlasts other songs. Joseph Scriven was an Irishman, a young graduate. He was 22, 24 years old. He came back. He was engaged to his childhood sweetheart. He came back home to where he stayed. And he was riding, literally, the day before their marriage, he was riding on the horse to meet his loved one with her family, just to talk through the day tomorrow and just to see one another. You know, all of us are like that. They didn't have Facebook, so they had to drive, literally. They didn't have WhatsApp or phone calls, so they had to get on their horses to meet one another, you know, because of their wedding day. So excited, talk through the life that they have together. He was away for his studies. And as they were driving towards one another, a few minutes before he got to her, something frightened her horse. And she fell off the horse into the rushing river next to her. She hit her head on a rock. She was lights out. She was unconscious and she drowned. Literally, he came just in time to see them drag her body out from the water. And he, being a believer, he said, his words were, it felt as though my bottom fell out. There was nothing left. My whole existence, a life of future that I've planned, everything was gone. So we turned to the Lord just in prayer. And he just spoke to God. And after a few months, he decided to relocate. It was too painful for him to be an island anymore. So he relocated to Ontario, to Canada, to Port Hope, small town there, where he started an existence. And through his relationship with God, he made a vow to to live as Jesus lived for other people. You know, he doesn't have a wife now or anything. How shall I live? So he just lived as a friend to whoever, just to show Jesus' heart to people. So literally, wherever he went, he just lived like that. And then, you know, people would say to him, here comes Joseph Griffin. He's a Good Samaritan. They called him the Good Samaritan of Port Hope. It's an amazing name. So literally, he wouldn't work for you if you could pay him. He only worked for people who couldn't pay him. So there was an old retired ship captain, and he was tutoring his four kids. There's no mention of his wife. And then there was a niece who came to live with him, and he fell in love with the niece. And it was a second chance for him to share life together. So they got engaged, and they were going to get married in springtime. You know, everyone gets married in springtime, still today in South Africa, anyway. So they got to get married in springtime, but through the winter, she got pneumonia. And just weeks before the engagement, against all, you know, every effort that they tried to prevent, she passed away again. And 10 years later, and he was alone again. And then he turned to the Lord again, I'm so lonely. I'm so lonely. And he turned to the Lord. And then a few years later, writing to his mom back in Ireland, this is the poem that he wrote to his mom that just tells of his life and what he's discovered in his life. What a friend we have in Jesus. All our sins and our griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit, or what needless pains we bear, all because we don't carry everything to God in prayer. And then that's the poem that was transcribed into the song that we're going to sing. As we sing the song today, and there's not going to be any other altar call or any other ministry, I want you to just think about, no condemnation, but think about your relationship with God. And I want to say, think about your prayer life, your conversations with God. And ask the Holy Spirit, as I've done recently, and I'm still learning. It's really uncomfortable, because up until now, I mean, I've been a pastor forever, and we've done ministry, and you do deliverance, and you do whatever needs to be done, church planting and stuff. But to be honest, I'm more of a co-worker with the Lord in many ways than I'm his friend. And I know that he loves me, and I know that I'm his dad, but, you know, maybe I am more like the older brother of the prodigal sons. I'm more like the older brother than I would like to admit, because my relationship with God has a lot to do with God's work on earth more than his interest in me and my interest in him. So it's a journey that's really uncomfortable. Some of you, you know, have walked this road many years ago, and you're quite comfortable with Jesus being your friend, with God being your friend. But let's sing the song and let's pray about it. And then after the song, maybe just take 2 minutes and tell the person next to you, what did you hear God say to you? What's the one thing that you heard the Lord say to you this morning? Thanks, Philem, Liesl.